Actually, that's a background I used during the GBC meetings. That's a picture of the Yamadutas and Yamaraj. Actually, sometimes during the GBC backgrounds, one time I put a background like it looked like I was in jail. Today I look like I was with Yamaraj. See, there's Yamaraj. You can see Yamaraj, he's punishing the sinful. So if I get back a little bit, then it looks like I'm right there with all them in Yamaraj's court. Gotta have a sense of humor. People are too serious nowadays. I think I should change, though. No, just leave Yamaraj on for a while. It should be pretty cool. Okay. So, I guess we'll chant Jai Radha Madhava. Today is also, actually, instead of chanting Jai Radha Madhava, today is the disappearance day of Gorkha Shorda's Babaji Maharaj. And I wasn't able to attend the celebration this morning in the temple because I was engrossed in the GBC meeting with my friend Yamaraj here. So I guess we'll chant the prayers of the departed Vaishnavas because I didn't get a chance to chant these prayers this morning. And, we have service for Srila Prabhupada's mission, so that took precedence. All right, so let's chant the prayers right now. Yehanilo prematana korana prachur henu prabhukota gela cha what Yehanilo prematana korana prachur henu prabhu. Whoops, let me get the harmonium so I can chant it properly. All right. Jaya Thakur, 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 Jaya Th
God.
Paramahansa Paravitakacharya Olsa Teta Satashi Shima is Divine Grace Sadaya Chananda Bhaktivinoda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Gijai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Gijai Anandakoti Vaishnav Vrindi Gijai Namacharya Srila Huidas Thakur Gijai Rem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Garadha Sivasiri Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Gijai Chi Shri Radhakrishna Gopikopana Shyam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Gijai Vrindavanam Gijai Maturam ki Shimali Lassi Devi Gijai Sandhavi Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premananda, Hari Hari Bol. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminath Namani, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Paschachachesha Tarani. Okay. So, Om Ganata Miranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Let me read the translation of this prayer by Narottama Das Thakur. He who brought the treasure of divine love and was filled with compassion and mercy, where is such a personality as Srinivasacharya God? Where am I, Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where am I, Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees, and whose association he performed to his pastimes, Narottama Das simply weeps. So just a few words about Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, whose disappearance day we are commemorating today. So Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji is the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj only had one disciple, and that was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had to really show his sincerity to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj to get initiated, because he was told that his Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was told by his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to take initiation from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So he went to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and said, please give me initiation. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I have to get Lord Chaitanya's permission. And so Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, okay. And he came back a little while later. And he said, did you get the Lord's permission? And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I forgot to ask. And then he came back another time and he said, well, Lord Chaitanya said no. And then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, my life is useless. And basically, he was almost ready to leave this world. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was very pleased with him at that particular point for his determination. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj appeared around the 1830s in Bengal, which is now known as Bangladesh, because at that time it was Bengal. And along the Padma River, and his name previously was Bamsi Das, and he was engaged in household affairs, and when his wife passed away, he took sannyas, or Babaji order, from Bhagavat Das Babaji, who is one of the disciples of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who Jagannath Babaji Maharaj is the spiritual master of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so for some time he lived, that is, talking about Gokishodas Babaji Maharaj, he lived in Brajamandal, and sometimes he went to Mayapur. And when he was in his 60s, around 1897, he went to Sridhar Mayapur to stay. And he used to live very, very simply. He would just gather some dried foodstuffs from the householders of the Holy Dham, or he would just eat some dust or sand from the Holy Dham. And he would wash earthen pots or use the earthen pots that were discarded by the people. And for his clothes, he would actually pick up the discarded cloth that had been used to cover the corpses at the burning ghat. And for some time, he actually stayed at Surabhi Kunj, which is actually the house Bhaktivinoda Thakur constructed on the other side of the Jalungi River near our Sridhar Mayapur. He lived so simply, he only had his tulsi bead. He was basically, let's say, from most points of view, he was actually illiterate, but he was able to read a little bit, and especially in Bengali. He was not a learned Sanskrit scholar, but he could read Bengali. And so, let's see, what else can I say about him? I told you about his initiation, giving initiation to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his determination never to have bad association. There's actually an interesting story that one time when he was having trouble with his eyesight, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked him to go to Calcutta for treatment, and Thakur Bhaktivinoda also requested him to go to Calcutta. And Gorkhashodas Babaji Maharaj replied, "I will never go to the illusory world of Calcutta," because he always wanted to stay in the Holy Dham of Mayapur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur informed Gorkhashodas Babaji Maharaj that you will always have good association because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur will take care of you, and you won't have any inconveniences. And Gorkhashodas Babaji Maharaj refused to accept service, even from his disciple. He said, "I'd rather die by drowning myself in the Ganges." He said, "So I will not drown in the Ganges, because that way I'll become a ghost." And then he actually disappeared for some time. Nobody could find him for about 45 days. And so he refused to accept service from others. He observed Ekadasi strictly, and he was intolerant of any pretender, anybody who tried to pretend that they were advanced devotees, because many people tried to imitate Srila Gorkhashodas Babaji Maharaj. Anyway, want to get to nectar of devotion? So we'll continue by getting to the nectar of devotion now. So that's all we're going to speak about Gorkhashodas Babaji Maharaj today. And let us continue in the nectar devotion on devotional service and conjugal love. Okay, let's share the screen. We're just finishing up this chapter. And when we finish up this chapter, there's only about a page and a half left of this particular chapter. That finishes up part three of nectar devotion. And then when we get into part four, which is the final part, which is very short. Part four is only 61, about less than 40 pages, about 38 pages. 38 pages. And part four deals with indirect rasas, which we mentioned before, the seven indirect rasas, and when rasas can conflict with each other, when it's tasty, or when it's accepted that they can conflict with that, conflict with each other, and when it's not acceptable. That's called the mixing of rasas. That's this final section of the Nectar Devotion deals with the mixing of rasas and the further analysis of mixed rasas. So let's finish up this chapter now. Okay, Nectar Devotion Ki Jai. Now remember, this is about conjugal love. That is, love between Krishna and the gopis, specifically between Krishna and the topmost of all the gopis, the topmost of all of his devotees, Srimati Radharani. When the lover and the beloved have a distinct feeling of not meeting each other, that stage is called Purva Rag, or preliminary attraction. In Pajavali, Radharani told her companion, "My dear friend, I was just going to the bank of the Yamuna, and all of a sudden, a very nice boy whose complexion is like a dark blue cloud became visible in front of my eyes. He glanced over me in a way that I cannot describe. But since this has occurred, I am sorry that I could no longer engage my mind in the duties of my household affairs." This is an instance of preliminary attraction for Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 53rd chapter, verse 2, Krishna told the messenger Brahmana, who came from Rukmini, "My dear Brahmana, just like Rukmini, I cannot sleep at night and my mind is always fixed on her. I know that her brother Rukmi is against me and that due to his persuasion, my marriage with her has been canceled." This is another instance of preliminary attraction. As far as man or anger is concerned, there is the following incident described in the Gita Govinda. When Srimati Radharani, in the company of several other gopis, she was being dimmed. Therefore, she immediately left the scene and took shelter in a nice flower bush where the black drones were humming. Then, hiding herself behind the creeper, she began to express her sorrow to one of her consorts. This is an instance of disagreement. An example of pravas, or being out of contact because of living in a distant place, is given in the Pajavali as follows. Since the auspicious day when Krishna left for Mathura, Srimati Radharani has been pressing her head in one of her hands and constantly shedding tears. Her face is always wet now, and therefore there's no chance of her sleeping even for a moment. So we read this yesterday. We'll just read it again. When the face becomes wet, the sleeping tendency is immediately removed. So when Radharani was always weeping for Krishna because of his separation, there was no chance of her getting any sleep for herself. In the Prahlad Sangita, Uddhava says, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, panic-stricken, doing to being pierced by the arrows of Cupid, is always thinking of you, the gopis, and he is not even accepting any proper rest. When the lover and beloved come together and enjoy one another by direct contact, this stage is called Sambhoga." There's the statement of the Pajabali as follows. Krishna embraced Srimati Radharani in such an expert manner that he appeared to be celebrating the dancing ceremony of the peacocks. Sri Rupa Goswami thus ends the fifth wave of its ocean of nectar of devotion. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as Gopal, the eternal form of the Lord. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta summary of the third division of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the matter of the five primary relationships with Krishna. Okay. So that third division dealt with the five primary relationships: Shantaras, Dasharas, Satyaras, Vatsalyaras, and Madhuryaras, or peaceful ras, servitude ras, friendship ras, parental ras, and finally conjugal ras. And so now we're going to hear about the indirect rasas. Remember, there's five direct rasas and seven indirect rasas. And the seven indirect rasas flavor the direct rasas. All of us have one direct ras with Krishna, one direct flavor of a taste or whatever with Krishna. We're either situated in Dasharas, Sakiras, Vatsayuras, and Maturiras. And to flavor or to enhance the flavor of our particular relationship with Krishna and Krishna's particular relationship with us, you have these indirect rasas. Now, as mentioned previously, even if you are situated in the friendship rasa with Krishna, your friendship rasa could be flavored from sometimes with one of the other direct rasas. Like Balaram, for example. He's in the friendship rasa with Krishna, Sakya rasa with Krishna, but his rasa is flavored to a certain degree with the parental mood. Even though he's not one of the parents of Krishna, still his relationship is flavored with the parental mood. So you got the flavoring of the different five primary rasas with each other, and you also have the flavoring of the seven indirect rasas with each other. But the seven indirect rasas, they come and go. In other words, now we're going to talk about laughing ecstasy. Sometimes the laughing ecstasy or humor comes, and sometimes one is very serious. So it's not a constant. It's a flavor that's sometimes there and sometimes not there. So here, Rupa Goswami, actually Prabhupada, is translating Rupa Goswami to give us a summary of this particular part of the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In the fourth division of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami has described seven kinds of indirect ecstasies of devotional service, known as laughing, astonishment, chivalry, compassion, anger, dread, that's fear, if you don't know what dread is, and ghastliness. You know, ghastliness means something really disgusting, like blood all over the place. Phew, Frankenstein or something like that. In this portion, Srila Rupa Goswami further describes these ecstasies of devotional feelings, some being compatible and others incompatible with one another. When one kind of ecstatic devotional service overlaps with another in a conflicting way, this state of affairs is called rasabhas, or a perverted presentation of mellows. And sometimes rasa bhas is flavorable, and sometimes it's not flavorable. I mean, for example, let's say if I was a gopi, I want to dance with Krishna, flute, and then the next sentence I would say, oh, well, whenever I think of my computer, I just want to get another one. Or that wouldn't be a spiritual rush. Whenever I think of my computer, I just want to throw it away. I mean, it's a conflict there. That's actually not tasteful. You don't mix your computer with conjugal love. Ghastliness or anger with conjugal love in that particular way. Sometimes anger can be mixed with conjugal love, but generally, if it has to do with the material world, you don't really mix it. Expert learned scholars say that laughing is generally found among youngsters or the combination of old persons and young children. This ecstatic loving laughing is sometimes found in persons who are very grave by nature. Once an old mendicant, that means a beggar, approached the door of Mother Yashoda's house, and Krishna told Yashoda, "My dear mother, I don't wish to go near this skinny villain. If I go there, he might put me within his begging bag and take me away from you." In this way, the wonderful child Krishna began to look at his mother while the mendicant who was standing in the door tried to hide his smiling face, although he could not do so. He immediately expressed his smiling. In this instance, Krishna himself is the object of laughing affairs. Remember, this is Krishna displaying himself as Dira Lalita. Once one of Krishna's friends informed him, "My dear Krishna, if you will open your mouth, then I'll give you one nice sugar candy mixed with yogurt." Krishna immediately opened his mouth, but instead of giving him sugar candy with yogurt, the friend dropped a flower in his mouth, After tasting this flower, Krishna turned his mouth in a disfigured way, and upon seeing this, all of his friends standing there began to laugh very loudly. Once a palmist, these are so humorous and so endearing and chanting that you could do this in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once a palmist came to the house of Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj asked him, "My dear sage, will you kindly check the hand of my child Krishna? Tell me how many years he will live and whether he will become the master of thousands of cows." Upon hearing this, the palmist began to smile, and Nanda Maharaj asked him, "My dear sir, why are you smiling? Why are you laughing? And why are you covering your face?" Because the palmist could see that Krishna would be not only the master of thousands or millions of cows, but he is the master of everybody. In such a laughing ecstasy of love, Krishna, or matters pertaining to Krishna, are the cause of the laughter. In such laughing devotional service, there are symptoms of jubilation, laziness, concealed feelings, and similar or other seemingly disturbing elements. According to Rupa Goswami's calculation, laughter and ecstatic love can be broken down into six divisions. These divisions, according to different degrees of smiling, are called, in a Sanskrit language, smita, hastita, hastita, avahastita, apahastita, and atihastita. These six classes of smiling can be classified as major and minor. The major division includes smita, hastita, avahastita, smiling, and the minor division includes avahastita, apahastita, and atihastita. Of course, the minor is actually much more pronounced. So it just escalates as you go through these different divisions. Smita, hasita, dahasita, abahasita, abahasita, and atihasita. Atihasita is the most pronounced, you know, just basically the most pronounced as far as smiling or laughing. When one is smiling but his teeth are not visible, one can distinctly mark a definite change in the eyes and in the cheeks. This is smita smiling. Once when Krishna was stealing yogurt, Janaki, the headmistress of the house, could detect his activities, and she was therefore coming very hurriedly to catch him. At that time, Krishna became very much afraid of Janaki and went to his elder brother, Baladev. He said, "My dear brother, I have stolen yogurt. Just see, Janaki is coming hurriedly to catch me." When Krishna was thus seeking the shelter of Baladev, because he was being chased by Janaki, all the great sages and the heavenly planets began to smile. This smiling is called smita smiling. Smiling in which the teeth are slightly visible is called hasita smiling. It's interesting how the acharyas, like Rupa Goswami, are actually analyzing even different types of smiling and laughter in different degrees. It's not that you have to remember all these terms. That's not that important. One day, I'll remind you, the so-called husband of Radharani was returning home. Krishna immediately changed and approached Abhimanyu's mother, Jatila, addressing her thus, "My dear mother, I am your real son, Abhimanyu." Oh, internet connection unstable. Give it a second. "But just see, Krishna, dressed up like me, is coming before you." Jatila, the mother of Abhimanyu, immediately believed that Krishna was her own son and thus became very angry at her real son who was coming home. She began to drive away her real son, who was crying, "Mother, mother, what are you doing?" Seeing this incident, all the girlfriends of Radharani who were present there began to smile, and a portion of their teeth was visible. This is an instance of hasita smiling. When the teeth are distinctly visible in a smile, this is called bahasita. One day when Krishna was engaged in stealing butter and yogurt in the house of Jatila, he assured his friends, "My dear friends, I know that this old lady is now sleeping very profoundly because she is breathing very deeply. Let us silently steal butter and yogurt without making any disturbance." But the old lady, Jatila, was not sleeping, so she could not contain her smiling, and her teeth immediately became distinctly visible. This is an instance of the hasita smiling. So the humor, and the smiling becomes more and more pronounced as we go through these different stages, and more static, actually. In a state of smiling, when the nose becomes puffed and the eyes squint, the smiling is called avahasita. Once early in the morning, when Krishna returned home, after performing his rasa dance, Mother Yashoda looked upon Krishna's face and addressed him thus, "My dear son, why do your eyes look like they have been smeared with some oxides? Have you dressed yourself with the blue garments of Baladev?" So in other words, Krishna had the blue garments, not of Baladev, but of Srimati Radharani on. Because when they got up and they rushed home, they forgot who was wearing whose garments. When Mother Yashoda was addressing Krishna in that way, a girlfriend who was nearby began to smile with a puffed nose and squinting eyes. This is an instance of avahasita smiling. The gopi knew that Krishna had been enjoying the rasa dance and that Mother Yashoda could not detect her son's activities or understand how he had become covered with the gopi's makeup. Her smiling was in the avahasita feature. When tears from the eyes are added to the smiling and the shoulders are shaking, the smile is called avahasita. When child Krishna was dancing in response to the singing of the old maidservant Javati, Narada was astonished. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who controls all the movements of great demigods like Brahma, was now dancing to the indications of an old maidservant. Seeing this fun, Narada also began to dance, and his shoulders trembled as his eyes moved. Due to his smiling, his teeth also became visible on account of the glaring effulgence from his teeth, the clouds in the skies turned silver. When a smiling person claps his hands and leaps in the air, the smiling expression changes into atihasita, or overwhelming laughter. An example of atihasita was manifested in the following incident. Krishna once addressed Jarati thus, "My dear good woman, the skin of your face is now slackened, so your face exactly resembles a monkey's." See how humorous Krishna is? He's not like your dull god who just sits and judges people all the time and doesn't have any fun. Krishna has all the fun, and devotees serve Krishna's fun. As such, the king of the monkeys, Balimukha, has selected you as his worthy wife. While Krishna was teasing Jarati in this way, she replied that she was certainly aware of the fact that the king of the monkeys was trying to marry her, but she had already taken shelter of Krishna, the killer of many powerful demons, and therefore she had already decided to marry Krishna instead of the king of the monkeys. Excuse me, it's funny. On hearing the sarcastic reply by the talkative Jarati, all the cowering girls present there began to laugh very loudly and clap their hands. This laughter, accompanied by the clapping of hands, is called atihasita. 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 Not atihasita. Sometimes there are indirect sarcastic remarks which also create atihasita. Circumstances, the short eyes. An example of one such remark is a statement which was made by one of the cowherd girls to Jutila, the daughter of Jutila and sister of Abhimanyu, the so-called husband of Radharani. Indirectly, statement. Dear Kutila. Whoops, wait until the internet becomes stable again. Just 1 second. Okay, it's back to stability. My dear Kutila, daughter of Jatila, your breasts are as long as string beans, simply dry and long. Phew. Your nose is so gorgeous that it defies the beauty of the noses of frogs. And your eyes are more beautiful than the eyes. Excuse me. The eyes of dogs. Your lips defy the flaming. Whoops, I'm just Your lips defy the flaming cinders of fire, and your abdomen is as beautiful as a big drum. Try telling that to some lady. Therefore, my dear, beautiful Kutila, you are the most beautiful of all the coward girls of Vrindavan, and because of your extraordinary beauty, I think you must be beyond the attraction of the sweet blowing of Krishna's flute. That's my favorite indirect rasa, obviously. Astonishment, which is another indirect rasa called Adbhuta. The ecstasy of astonishment in devotional service is perceived in two ways, directly by the experience of one's own eyes and directly by hearing from others. When Narada came to see the activities of the Lord in Dwarka, and he saw that Krishna was present within every palace in the same body and was engaged in different activities at 16,108 palaces with 16,108 wives and kids to go along with each one of those wives, he was struck with wonder. This is one of the examples of astonishment and devotional service by direct perception. One of the friends of Mother Yashoda said, "Yashoda, just see the fun. On the one hand, there is your child who is always captivated by sucking the milk from your breast, and on the other hand, there is the great Govardhan Hill, which can obstruct the passing of the clouds. But still, just see how wonderful it is that this great Govardhan Hill is resting on the finger of your child's left hand, just as though it were a toy. Is this not very mysterious?" This statement is another example of astonishment and devotional service by direct perception. Excuse me. An instance of astonishment and devotional service by indirect perception occurred when Maharaj Parikshit heard from Shukadeva Goswami about Krishna's killing Narakasura, who had been fighting Krishna with 11 Akshahini divisions of soldiers. Each division of Akshahini soldiers contained several thousand elephants, several thousand horses and chariots, and several hundreds of thousands of infantry soldiers. Narakasura possessed 11 such divisions, and all of them were throwing arrows toward Krishna, but Krishna killed them all simply by throwing 3 arrows from his side. When Maharaj Parikshit heard of this wonderful victory, he immediately rubbed the tears from his eyes and became overwhelmed with joy. This instance is an example of astonishment and devotional service by indirect perception through oral reception. In other words, he heard about it. There's another example of indirect astonishment, trying to test Krishna to see if he were truly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma stole all the coward boys and cows from him. But after a few seconds, he saw that Krishna was still present with all the cows, calves, and coward boys exactly in the same way. When Lord Brahma described this incident to his associates on the Satya Loka planet, they all became astonished. Brahma told them that after taking away all the boys, he saw Krishna again playing with the same boys in the same fashion. Their bodily complexion was blackish, almost like Krishna's, and they all had 4 arms. The same calves and cows were still present there in the same original fashion. Even while describing this incident, Brahma became almost overwhelmed. And the most astonishing thing, he added, was that many other Brahmas from many different universes had also come there to worship Krishna and his associates. Whew. That's shocking. Similarly, when there was a forest fire in the Bandiravana, that means the forest, Bandira forest. Vana means forest. Like Vrindavana, it means the forest of Vrinda. Krishna instructed his friends to close their eyes tightly, and they all did this. Then when Krishna had extinguished the fire, the coward boys opened their eyes and saw that they had been relieved from the danger and that their cows and calves were all safe. Oops. They began to perceive the wonder of the situation simply by guessing how Krishna had saved them. This is another instance of indirect perception causing astonishment and devotional service. The activity of the person's friends, but even very wonderful formed by a person who is not one's friend will not create any impression. It is because of love that one's wonderful activities create an impression in the mind. Wow. That's an amazing statement. It is because of love that one's wonderful activities create an impression in the mind. So even if someone does something wonderful, if you have no attraction for them, you'll actually deny the reality that they did it. And you really won't be impressed by it. Love is what impresses you more than anything else. Helps you do everything, control your senses, focus your mind on Krishna. That's why bhakti yoga is far superior to any other yoga practice or whatever. Because by love, the mind is controlled automatically. Wonderful. Just like I am thinking how to please Prabhupada, so it controls my mind. If I was just thinking, how can I become liberated, get out of this material world, or become famous, it'd be very hard to control the mind. But thinking, what would Prabhupada want? How to please Prabhupada? Because pleasing Prabhupada is non-different than pleasing Krishna. Because what pleases Prabhupada pleases Krishna, what pleases Krishna pleases Prabhupada. Things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. They're not the same person, though. Okay. Let's get to chivalry. When on account of love and devotional service of the Lord, there is special, valorous enthusiasm, the resultant activities are called chivalrous. These chivalrous activities can be manifested in the acts of mock fighting, means play fighting, giving charity, showing mercy, and executing religious principles. By performing chivalrous activities in fighting, one is called Yuddha Vira, that means chivalry, heroic fighting. It's heroic fighting. Vira means strong, heroic. So Yuddha Vira, Yuddha means fight. And so it's heroic fighting. By charitable activities, one is called Dhanavira. That means basically heroic charity. Because a hero is basically chivalrous. By showing extraordinary mercy, one is called Dayavira. That means one who is charitably a hero. And when one is munificent in executing religious rites, he is called Dharmavira. He's a hero in Dharma or religion. In all such different chivalrous activities, Krishna is the object. Now we're going to hear some examples. When a friend wants to satisfy Krishna by performing some chivalrous activities, the friend becomes the challenger, and Krishna himself becomes the opponent. Or else Krishna may give audience to the fighting, and by his desire, another friend becomes the opponent. A friend once challenged Krishna thus, "My dear Madhava, you are very restless because you think that no one can defeat you. But if you do not flee from here, then I shall show you how I can defeat you, and my friends will be very satisfied to see this." In other words, this is the rasa, the direct rasa of friendship, but it's mixed with chivalry. Okay? Very easy to understand. It's just like you have a vegetable and you mix it with different spices, that's all. A broccoli is a broccoli is a broccoli. Yet you can add different spices to broccoli. You know, asafoetida, cumin, chili peppers, different things to flavor the broccoli, but broccoli is always a broccoli. So, the same way Krishna's friend is always Krishna's friend, but sometimes he's challenging, sometimes there's anger, sometimes there's laughter that flavors the relationship. I mean, that's normal. This is very easy to understand. Krishna and Sudama were very intimate friends, yet Sudama, out of anger with Krishna, challenged him. So here you have anger also flavoring the friendship relationship as well as chivalry. When both of them began to fight, all the friends on the bank of the Yamuna enjoyed the wonderful fighting of the two friends. They prepared some arrows for mock fighting, and Krishna began to throw his arrows at Sridham. Sridham began to block these arrows by whirling his pole. And by Sridham's chivalrous activities, Krishna became very satisfied. Such mock fighting generally takes place among chivalrous persons and creates wonderful excitement for all viewers. There's a statement in the Hari Vamsa, Hari Vamsa, that sometimes Arjuna and Krishna fought in the presence of Kunti, and Arjuna would be defeated by Krishna. In such chivalrous fighting between friends, there is sometimes bragging, complacence, pride, power, taking to weapons, challenging, and standing as an opponent. All these symptoms become impetuses to chivalrous devotional service. One friend challenged Krishna thus, "My dear friend Damodar, you are an expert only in is weak and you adopted cheating means. Great fighter by such action." Now, internet's bad again. Just wait a second until it gets back. Hold on. Okay, back. "You have advertised yourself as a serpent, and I am the peacock who will now defeat you." The peacock is the ablest enemy of the serpent. In such fighting between friends, when the self-advertisement becomes personal, learned scholars say that it is a sub-ecstasy. When there is a roaring challenge, certain kinds of movement for fighting, enthusiasm, no weapons, and assurance given to frightened witnesses, all these chivalrous activities are called sub-ecstasy. One friend addressed Krishna in this manner, "My dear Madhusudana, you know my strength, yet you are encouraging Bhadrasena and not me to challenge mighty Baladev. By this action, you are simply insulting me because my arms are as strong as the bolts of the gate." A devotee once said, "My dear Lord Krishna, may your challenger Sridham become glorious for his chivalrous activities, just as vibrating like a thundercloud and roaring like a cloud, like a lion, sorry. May all glories go to Sridham's chivalrous activities. Chivalrous activities in the matter of fighting, charity, mercy, and execution of religious rituals are all called constitutional, whereas expressions of pride, emotion, endurance, kindness, determination, jubilation, enthusiasm, jealousy, and remembrance are called unconstitutional." Unconstitutional means they're not always there, sometimes they're manifest. When Stoka Krishna, one of many friends, the many friends of Krishna, was fighting with him, his father chastised him for fighting with Krishna, who was the life and soul of all the residents of Vrindavan. Upon hearing these chastisements, Stoka Krishna stopped his fighting, but Krishna continued to challenge him, and thus, in order to meet the challenge, Stoka Krishna took his pole and began to display his dexterity by whirling it. Once Sridham challenged Bhadrasena and said to him, "My dear friend, you needn't be afraid of me yet. I shall first of all defeat our brother Balarama. Then I shall beat Krishna, and then I shall come to you." Bhadrasena therefore left the party of Balarama and joined Krishna, and he agitated his friends as much as the Mandra Hill had agitated the whole ocean. By his roaring sounds, he deafened all of his friends, and he inspired Krishna with his chivalrous activities. Once Krishna challenged all of his friends and said, "My dear friends, just see, I'm jumping with great chivalrous prowess. Please do not flee away." Upon hearing these challenging words, a friend named Bharutapa counter-challenged the Lord and struggled against him. One of the friends once remarked, "Sudam is trying his best to see Damodar defeated, and I think that if our powerful Subal joins him, they will be a very beautiful combination, like a valuable jewel bedecked with gold." In these chivalrous activities, only Krishna's friends can be his opponents. Krishna's enemies can never actually be his opponents. Therefore, this challenging by Krishna's friends is called devotional service and chivalrous activities. Let's see if we can finish up this section. Slowly knots. Let's see. Namadeva. No, we're not going to be able to finish this. So, anyway, we'll just end right here and we'll continue tomorrow reading about chivalry, one of the indirect rasas that flavor the direct rasas. Okay, we'll take some questions. Give me 1 second to unmute everybody. Okay. All right. I think we can take some questions now. Who has questions?
Gurudev.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Pranesha, when are you getting married?
On 30th, Gurudev.
30th. Okay, the 30th. Let me mark that in my calendar. So that's on a Monday.
Yes.
So what time is the marriage?
It's 2 to 5 p.m.
2 to 5 p.m. in India.
Yes.
So I definitely have to be there. Oh my God. It'll be early in the morning for me. Anyway, I'll be there for part of it, all right?
Yes.
You'll have it on Zoom or will you, how are you going to do it?
Yeah, in June.
In Zoom.
Yes.
Okay. Congratulations. You have a question?
Yes, Gurudev. So my question is like, is Krishna is planned everything at the time of birth of the children, like the astrology is concerned?
Krishna doesn't control you. You have the free will to do what Krishna wants or not to do what Krishna wants. You understand? So
Yes.
Krishna not planning. He's not going to say, Purnesha will do this on this day and this and that day, and he will surrender to his guru, hopefully. No. Actually, it depends on what you want to do. There's free will. You are not controlled.
Yes.
So you're responsible. In other words, you're responsible. You can't say, hey, this is just supposed to happen. You know, I'm just supposed to be in Maya today. Don't blame me. You know, I was supposed to smoke ganja today. It was Krishna's desire. I was supposed to do this, I was supposed to. No, you have. Every day you wake up and you decide what you're going to do that day. Okay?
Yes, Gurudev.
All right, so yeah, just plan for your marriage. Ooh, so it's going to be up from 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh my God. You know what time that is and where we are? Let's say 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock is 5:30 in the morning, our time. So you just subtract 2 hours from there. Ooh, 3:30 in the morning. So your marriage starts at 3:30 in the morning, Pranesha. My time. Do I have to attend it at 3:30 in the morning, or can I just like come a little later? Can I come later?
Yes, to the whatever is convenient.
Convenient. Whoever talked to me about convenience before. Anyway, so all right, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. I mean, that's a long marriage. And I always cry at marriages too, so. All right, I'm not going to make a joke out of that one.
Gurudev, do you cry for the groom?
I cry for both of them. Cry. I just think, oh my God, Krishna's illusory energy is so strong. How can it entangle these poor souls? Anyway, that's just joking. No, it's good you're getting married. I'm just teasing. Okay, who else wants to ask a question?
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Hare Krishna here. What question do you have?
Obeisances and dandavat pranam to you.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, as we are discussing different rasas, like parental, fraternity, conjugal, and friendship and all, so people like me, like people like in this material world, in the Kali Yuga, What rasas we should start with?
The one we should be concerned right now is servitude. How to serve Krishna's representative, how to serve his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. And that servitude that we do should be done in the mood of awe and reverence. You know, that is like, you know, reverential servitude.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry about friendship or conjugal love. Don't worry about conjugal love. Don't worry about mother or father like that. Just think that I'm a servant of Krishna, Gopi Bharata, Padakamala, Dasa Dasa, Dasana Dasa. I'm a servant of a servant of a servant of Krishna. Identify yourself like that. Just like I identify, my identification is identify myself as a servant of Prabhupada. That, to me, that's perfection. I think I'm a servant of Prabhupada. And that relationship is servitude. And as far as whatever I am in the spiritual world, that's whatever I am.
But Prabhuji, how do we develop the love in that sense? You know,
by perfecting your chanting.
Okay.
By perfecting your chanting in servitude to the holy name, to the spiritual master, then it'll be revealed to you what your eternal rus is. But it will be revealed to you when you're free of anarthas. As long as you are controlled by lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear, kamakrodha madamatsaya varibhaya, as long as you're controlled by these things. But first of all, you have to, it's like growing. Like sometimes a very young girl will try to understand what it means to have a family, to have children, for example. And if she's allowed to grow up normally, then she can function in that capacity. But, you know, there has to be a normal growth. So the normal growth in Krishna consciousness occurs through the practice of bhakti, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, residing in the holy place, or making one's home a holy place, serving the Vaishnavas, chanting the Lord's holy names, engaged in Sankirtan. So, of course, in worshiping the Tulsi plant and all these other nice things, then automatically this becomes revealed to one in time. So in the meantime, yes, we're servants and we're ecstatic. I mean, I'm very happy being a servant of Krishna. And then these things are revealed. Not that someone has to tell you about them. When you're relatively free from lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear. It doesn't matter if you're working on the outside. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the great Acharya, who is the spiritual master of Gorgashwara's Babaji Maharaj, he worked on the outside. He had a job. He had so many children. He worked as a court magistrate. And he was a pure devotee. And he was in touch with his spiritual identity. I mean, he's an interesting devotee, of course. So it doesn't matter what your situation is. Whether you're grahasta or brahmacharya, sannyas, kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra kiva nai, ye krishna tatva veta. If you know the science of Krishna and have purified your heart, many of our acharyas are married with family and working. Many, many, many. I mean, even Srila Vyasadeva, who was the compiler of the Vedic literatures, he was a householder. And his child was Shukadeva Goswami. So don't worry about what's going on externally. Worry about what you can do internally. You know, cultivating. Especially the holy name. Cultivating a relationship of servitude to the holy name. To Krishna's name. Just cry out when you're chanting. Especially on a day like today. Today is Ekadashi. Those of you don't know what Ekadashi is, it's a special day. It's the 11th day of the moon. And it's a special day for increasing your chanting. I mean, I always chant more rounds on Ekadashi. And when I chant more rounds, I become happier and happier and happier. The more you can chant, the better. but be practical at the same time.
All right. Thank you so much.
I mean, it's nice to be a servant of Krishna as pure devotee. I mean, to me, I'm happy eternally serving Srila Prabhupada. I mean, just being at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. I mean, I could do that forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. I mean, that's perfection. Wow. But right now, we're all at Maya's lotus feet, Durga's lotus feet.
Okay.
And Durga's kicking us with miseries from the body and mind, miseries from other living entities, and miseries from the material nature. And so, anyway, it's ecstatic taking shelter of Krishna's pure devotee. I mean, that's the ecstasy. Krishna says, one who says he is a devotee, my devotee is not my devotee. Krishna says, he who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. Lord Shiva says, Aradhanam sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam param tasmat patatram devi tvadiyanam samachanam. That the best type of worship is worship of Krishna, and even better than worship of Krishna is worship of Krishna's devotee. So I am a worshiper of Krishna's devotee, Srila Prabhupada. That's me. And whatever I am in the spiritual world, I am that I am.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, I don't. Actually, I just worry about serving Prabhupada, and Krishna and Prabhupada takes care of the rest. Like when you have $1 million, you don't have to worry about any of the other your other expenses. So when you have Prabhupada's lotus feet, you don't have to worry about anything else spiritually because you've attained it all. You got it. You got a free pass.
Sure.
It's called Kripa Siddha. Kripa Siddha means being perfect by the mercy of Krishna's pure devotee. And so if you have the mercy of Krishna's pure devotee, you're perfect. Of course, you have to accept the mercy. It's not that just like some disciple sent me a picture today of him massaging my feet. And he said, my pure devotee now. Insinuating that he had reached perfection because he had massaged my feet. But actually, the guru's body has another part called the mouth. Because you're not supposed to massage the mouth. That would be bad. No mouth massages. So he's supposed to listen to the mouth. Some people only want the guru's feet without the mouth. Just make sure he wears a mask during COVID, you know, so he can't speak. So, anyway, so that's how you get the mercy. Anyway, so many quotes I can give. So, yes, of course, we respect the guru's feet, worship the guru's feet, but more important is the mouth than the feet. All right, so.
All right, thank you.
Okay, good question. That was a very instructive question. Anybody else has a question? Question or comment or argument?
Gurudev, I have a doubt.
Yeah.
So earlier Prabhupada was saying that if someone does something, you're only impressed by it if you love them.
Permanent impressions, not the impressed in the sense. Let me unpack that. Impressed in the sense, not, okay. I can say, you know, I'm impressed with how many votes Donald Trump got in the election. But it doesn't create any impression on my subtle body or my heart. You understand? So when there's love connected to it, then that creates a permanent impression in my heart. You know, when we're talking about the word impressed, it can also mean, you know, I'm impressed by what you did, or it creates an impression, a permanent impression. Like I can remember, I did a lot of things in my life, but the times I saw Prabhupada are crystal clear to me. The times I was serving Prabhupada and physically with Prabhupada are crystal clear to me. And it, and everything else I did in life, you know, I'm just wondering whether I did it. Not really, it's not that bad. Not that many senior moments. But anyway, so it's just, but it's, it creates an impression. I may remember other things, that's true. But the impression, if I just like close my eyes and I think back upon, let's say, standing behind Prabhupada, someone asked me the question, what impression, what was one of the things that impressed you the most with Prabhupada? And I just said, one time I was standing behind Prabhupada and just watching him play the cartels. I can close my eyes and see the scene. And I can't really do that with too much else in life. Other things I can see, like when I saved you from Maya, I can remember that very well. I closed my eyes and I remember every single aspect of that. Because that was done out of love.
You're doing it all the time.
What? Because that was done out of love. You know, it's done like, oh my God, I can't let him go. There's great anxiety. Because we love you, Gopal. Okay, so.
So I suppose it's sort of like a chicken or the egg question. Do you develop love by being impressed with someone's activities? Or do you become more impressed because you already love someone?
I think you become more impressed because you love someone.
You have so to how love do you?
I mean, there's a lot of people who do amazing activities. Like, what was the two magicians in Las Vegas, Sigmund and what is the other name?
Freud
or something like that.
Siegfried and Roy.
What?
Siegfried and Roy.
Siegfried and Roy. Yeah, I thought you said Freud. But anyway, and Roy. So, you know, I saw some of their thing, you know, videos of some of the things they did. And I was impressed, but love didn't come into my mind. So the love has to be there.
Yeah.
You know, there's material impression from the, you know, whatever other organs you have in your body, but from the heart is real impressions. All right.
Thank you, Gurudev.
All righty. And someone asked me, "Is it all right to beg Radha Krishna for pure devotional service?" Yes, but do it. The interesting thing is that you beg, oh, please give me pure devotional service. And then Krishna says, can you do this? And you say, not today, Krishna. You know, it's like, you're begging, begging, begging. You got to do it. Now that, anyway, someone just sent me a message. Yes, your dream was very nice. I was just teasing you. Someone asked me a question, Ekadasi. No. They said, is Ekadasi a lady? Because she's a Dasi? That would mean Ekadasi. That means one lady. No. It's a name of the, it's feminine, but it's a name of the week, like Ekadasi, Triodasi. And the names of the month are actually like that. Chaturdasi. It's a day. you know, it's the 14th day. It means day. Day, which is feminine. Okay, I think we have to end now. Thank you very much for joining us. And everybody, tomorrow. What's tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow we will say. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving here in America. Please, nobody eat turkeys. Or else that's what you'll be in your next life. If you eat a turkey, you will become a turkey. Hare Krishna. So anyways, you'll see everybody tomorrow, same time, same station. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.